King Aegon the First Targaryen took both of his sisters to wife. Rhaenys and Visenya were dragon riders with their silver gold hair, purple eyes, and beauty of true Targaryens. Elsewise, the two queens were unlike each other as any two women could be, save in one other respect. Each of them gave the king a son.
Fast forward. The reign of King Maegor, one Targaryen, known to history and legend as Maegor the Cruel, lasted 6 years and 66 days. And he died at 6 p.m.
Ooh, at the age of 66 years old. 6:06
p.m., the 66th second. That's not a thing. Upon his death, his corpse was burned in the yard of the Red Keep. His ashes interred afterward on Dragonstone beside those of his mother. He died childless and left no heir of his body. Digimon did the same thing with their big bad guy.
Really?
Yeah, in the first season.
It's a really clean break.
What is?
You're the bad guy dying with no heirs.
Oh, yeah, but I was talking about the 666 thing.
Oh, okay, got it.
He's a bad guy.
Yeah, I know, if it wasn't clear enough.
Yeah.
Man, this chapter, first of all, is literally 1,000 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got to put that out there at the top of the episode.
Sorry to everyone that cracked open their book to be like, all right, we're going to give Simone's for Game of Thrones this right. week. What?
Well, we did the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking about that as we were reading because we did a call for Owens the night before we recorded. Mm-hmm. No big deal. We also sat down to read right before we recorded. No big deal. The usual. I'm like 20 pages into the chapter and I'm like,
showing signs of fatigue.
Yeah. Like, how much is left?
Anis. Yeah. Anis.
I can't remember everyone's name. Rainies. This was a really good chapter though.
Yeah, it was.
For as long as it was there. And I mean, this is so stupid to say, but so much happened in the chapter. It was really interesting. I found it to be exciting. And we were talking a little bit after we finished reading the chapter about how much we better understand Maegor. I mean, we've heard about him mm-hmm. as this cruel, unusually cruel, intense
like the
ruler.
Archetypal bad Targaryen uh-huh. before the Mad King.
The 666 guy.
Yeah.
And now we get that deep dive and we get to see from him as a small baby all the way up until his...
The paragraph 666. I just read. Yeah.
Be the quote-unquote bad guy.
All the way for him to be, minimized into a trope almost.
I know.
Yeah.
But again, that's kind of the nature of...
I think that George also lost a little bit of momentum toward the end of this chapter mm-hmm. as far as his richness of details. Mm-hmm. A lot of the things that happened with Maegor whenever his rule started to fell apart.
Yeah.
With a little bit less of the romantic explanation of where so far in these four chapters of Fire and Blood, there's some mystery buried in there. And then in this chapter, I think exemplifies the best, some of the best moment by moment reading, bookish sort of feeling. I found myself really feeling close to Anis.
Yeah.
And he's not, or Anis, he's not someone that I, are we going to call him Anis or Anis? It's a mixed bag today. He's not someone that I ever thought that I would know.
Sure.
That I foresaw myself feeling close to. But this chapter had that, there was a flow at some parts, especially with him. We spent a lot of time with him and inside of his mind and how he came to his conclusions and stuff. There's a lot of intricate detail about their followers and the highborns that they've either risen up or they've turned to their side mm-hmm. and what they are given based on how loyal they are to the Targaryens. There was a lot of romance and detail in Aenys's period, I felt, of the chapter, talking about, and even when we were mentioning Aegon, the first before he died in this chapter, before he had a stroke, more details about the crumbling of the infrastructure that he and his sisters had built in the first couple chapters.
Yeah.
But toward the end, whenever, I guess pretty much after Visenya died, I guess after the Black Brides almost, mm-hmm. after the three wives, Maegor's decline was just, George kind of summed it up a lot faster. A lot was happening. There was a lot of momentum. And it seemed like the point was, it was less about him sort of being minimized as a character. And it was just more focused on the point was that this guy just lost control of everything without anything about what he did, what he carried out, the way that he was effective before really changing. It was really about everyone else changing their minds. Mm-hmm. But I felt like we didn't get as much detail on that, about their minds changing. We're just sort of supposed to know that they were changing their minds because of what was happening to Magor.
Right.
And so I guess George didn't want to come right out and say it when he has sort of very obviously said the good things about how the kingdom has gotten built and the good things about how the nobles have decided to follow these guys. I felt like we kind of were left to just know that he was crazy, and that it's just kind of like that cringy feeling that when you see someone sort of losing it, everyone's like, ugh.
Well, especially as the things he did continue to escalate. And after he had to deal with everything with Tyana, cursing all of his wives and all of this issue that he's having with an heir, and he finally just can't deal with these uprisings anymore. Kind of what you're thinking about. I thought it was interesting that with Aenys, we get his decline in, or we get multiple points where he's unable to make a decision, and that's kind of his big fault, is he can't do that. But Magor has the same exact thing happen to him at the end of his reign.
Does he?
Yeah, as soon as Jaehaerys declares, mm-hmm. Magor tries to call his guys, and he kind of looks around and realizes that
only the people with the spooky last name showed up.
Yeah, he's got just a bunch of the little guys, and so they spend the night talking about what they might do, and he dismisses everyone.
After he kills the one who questions, I forget the guy's name. Yeah. Just take the black.
Racking his brain, deciding what to do, and then the next thing we know, he's dead. And so he potentially, seemingly, although there's speculation, which I think we'll get to in some further chapters down the road, but also potentially died too, like his, this is always the classic, but like Aenys died just of stress. Like it was too stressful.
That was,
and so I'm going to succumb to.
That was his 666.
Yeah. Him is too stressed out. Anyway.
Wait, can we talk about that for a second? Aenys Targaryen.
Mm-hmm.
Aegon, proud, strong Aegon's first son. Died of
stress.
Of having to be the one to pick out the food, basically. Right.
From day one, he was weak, you know?
Sure.
Like, they describe him as sickly and spindly.
Mm-hmm.
That is not nice.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
Especially when you look at Magor, who is described being, like, the biggest, most powerful baby anyone had ever seen in their lives.
Also violent and terrible.
From literally day one.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved this line talking about Aenys' early days. It says, Aenys would not disgrace himself in battle, his tutors told one another, but no songs would ever be sung about his prowess. I feel like that's such a... And he was a good singer, and he was courteous.
Keep going.
It's just...
So who do you like? That's the question.
Well, I mean, I don't... Well, obviously, like, Magor's the quote-unquote bad guy in this scenario.
Yeah.
But... It's interesting to me when we can have the opportunity to zoom out from this view, which we obviously do, to kind of look at the succession of everything and think about Aegon's legacy and what he was trying to accomplish. And Aenys wasn't the one. Like, he wasn't the guy. And there was nothing he could have done. It was just he had bad personality. It's not you. It's not me. You have a bad personality that we don't like. But... He was the one who was supposed to be in charge. He spent his whole life just assuming that everybody was going to fall to his feet. And that was kind of the issue that came up time and time again, especially at the end of his reign, was he was just confused as why people weren't falling into line. But he just didn't have that, like, je ne sais quoi that his dad did in order to strong-arm people into his – to bend to his will.
Yeah.
I'm talking a lot, but there's –
Oh, please.
Something else that I found really interesting was I think that the end of Aegon's life was so peaceful, and like he died in such like a really cool, nice way, surrounded by his grandsons, like talking about the war, and things had been really peaceful and very prosperous, but it hadn't been that long. And there was a point, I cannot scroll through this chapter as easily while we were talking, but there was some point where they were talking about all the lords and the kings and the guys all remember when he came. I mean, this is just a couple of years. What, 40 years between after the conquest? It's only 40 years before Magor takes the, oh no, before he gets exiled for, but anyway, whatever. There's like 40-ish years between them. So this is all fresh in their minds. Like they remember life before the Targaryens even came or before they were even united. And so Aegon just had, as we talked about in the last couple episodes, he had the personality and he had the vibe and the faith let a lot of things pass. And he just was able to.
For a long time they did. 40 years is a long time.
Just kind of let stuff go. And so, you know, Aenys was kind of set up for failure almost in a way because he just didn't have like the vibe to be able to hold on to the, to kind of beat everyone to submission again.
Or the wives.
Or the wives or the.
He only had one wife. That was his. That was his.
You need many wives to be able
apparently.
To. But Maegor and all of his faults, unfortunately, had the power to be able to beat everyone to submission or to at least do so bad and be so cruel and so awful that Jaehaerys could come in and make everybody feel good again.
Yeah, and Jaehaerys was pretty far down the line too.
Yeah, but you think about Aenys, if he had been able to continue to live and didn't die from the stress, he was holding on with threads to keep everything together. The Targaryen dynasty was quick to, was like years away from being completely done away with. And so.
Plus, it's not fair that he claimed it so completely, I feel. Because the conquest was really Aegon and his two sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Rhaenys died. And I know that there was complications with who was born first and complications with producing heirs in general. But once Aenys takes over, it is sort of your call to say, well, now the succession is just stalwartly with my folks.
That's what he wanted.
Sure.
Right?
You're in the position to be able to, you can do that. But one of the people that was the reason why this all happened in the first place, Visenya, is still there, loud and proud, still powerful, still extremely smart, still giving you advice that you're not following at all.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, you're going to double down on bad ideas. Just useless, not very good ideas. And you're her nephew. You're the brother's son. You're not someone that anyone has a particular reason to follow. Only if there's power in Old Town and the rest of the realm saying that succession has to be like this, otherwise we won't follow you guys. But that's a really bad argument because Old Town and everybody else in the realm did not want the Targaryens to be there in the first place.
Right.
So how did they make that a possibility to be changed? Well, they changed it. And that's the point that Visenya is trying to make the entire time, is that the stuff that you're dealing with is not something that you need to think about. You need to act on it. That's literally how we got here. That's literally how we stay in charge.
Right.
What are you going to do?
Well, he also was just oblivious too. So he just didn't know anything.
But she was saying it to him. She was saying.
But it was almost too late because there's so many lines in this chapter where it's like, Aenys grossly misunderestimated why people were hating him. He didn't understand what was going on. He didn't see the writing on the wall, et cetera, et cetera. It was almost like he was sinking into being the king, like 200 years into a dynasty.
Yeah, that's kind of the vibe they tried to give when it talked about his effectiveness of being a ruler sort of around the castle waning as he gave in to having fun.
Right. But he's only the second guy. But what is it like? What's his dad supposed to do? He taught him everything he knew. He took him everywhere he needed to go. He showed him everything he needed to show. But maybe...
not everyone's the same.
Exactly.
We're going to say maybe...
maybe he needed... it was a little too soft. Like he needed some... he didn't have enough conflict. It was too easy for him.
It was because he came from the nice sister. Yeah, not the dark sister.
Well, that's kind of... almost the vibe I got when I was...
oh, for sure. That's the vibe.
Yeah.
It's the same energy as the 666 thing. George isn't really trying to pull any punches in this chapter.
When Maegor cuts somebody's face off when he's 8 years old.
Yeah.
He's like, oh man, the horse kicked me. I'm going to kill the stable boy. Or not kill him,
slashed
but he slashed his
face when he ran up.
I'm going to slash the stable boy as he comes to see me do this.
The murder of the cat.
Oh yeah, I can't remember that either.
Maegor was 13. That was when he got married. Sorry to interrupt, so I can find the
well,
cat killings.
Well, while you find that, it just made me kind of feel bad for Aenys almost because he just, man, he dies in such a sad way. And so George R. Martin very much leaning into like the black and white, good versus evil, when I think there's obviously so much more going on underneath the surface.
For sure. But I think that's the point of what we're supposed to decode. Like, it goes back to my question, which one do you like? It's clear that Aenys is someone that we could sort of relate to. He's being described as someone that makes fast friends with people and that folks gravitate toward
him.
Well, other than that. But they also said at one point he became like...
he kind of grew out of it.
Yeah. Well, and it's another topic I want to talk about whenever his dragon, whenever Silverwing, or was it Quicksilver? I get those two confused. Whenever they bonded, came together and...
Quicksilver that's was the whole, his.
That's the whole... a whole other chunk that isn't quite relative to many other things in the story yet for me. Like, for example, it doesn't really parallel with the direwolves perfectly yet.
Right.
So I guess the mechanics of it seem a little broken to me. But it's nice and mythological and fateful. And I guess we could just say that sort of bonding, that sort of adulthood boon is from a stock of people that are from, like, the Valyria, you know? Not a race of people, but because I'm sure it's not just people that look the same there.
No.
But it's probably just being a product of the time, mm-hmm. and having such close proximity to these kinds of magical creatures. At some point, it became like maybe they intermingled their societies for so long. But again, it has to be some kind of a connection to some kind of... I don't want to say magical connection to the earth, but at the same time, the way that they bond with the dragons and it being seemingly familial has a fishy element to it. But at the same time, it could just be that they planned ahead and just kept all the dragon eggs so no other people could have dragons, and that potentially this is a bonding experience that happened with a lot of folks.
Well, and you think about later, not just with Aenys, but with his kids, when Rhaena puts the dragon eggs into Jaehaerys and Alysanne's cribs.
Yeah.
Just kind of that kind of, like, you think about, I don't know, I think about like my brother and our dog who they were like, grew up together, you know? It's like you put them in that situation when they're both really young. Aenys's dragon was his same age. He was born the same year, you know?
So that relationship is sort of giving a perspective that he didn't previously know, or that they don't previously know about at that time. Like Rhaena and Dreamfire.
You know what else it makes me think of is like the first time Harry rode a broom.
Okay.
Which it doesn't even necessarily have anything to do with the broom itself, but that it gave him the first opportunity to be free or to be his own person.
Yeah, responsibility.
Know? Yeah, and so I wonder if, like, for somebody like Aenys or any of those people, obviously the dragon has a lot to do with it because that's a living, breathing creature that has, you know, its own vibe and energy, but...
That helps increase the intensity because you can't say no. You can't lie to it. It's like you guys are either getting along and understanding each other or you're doing something wrong.
Right. And you're both young and you're at the same age and you're both kind of figuring out the world at the same time at the same thing. And you both have this opportunity to explore freedom. Who was it that wrote? It was Rhaena who just, her dragon.
So Dreamfire. Aenys' first kid. Yeah.
Dreamfire, they were seen as far as XYZ, like was flying everywhere, going all over the place because it was just she was this shy, quiet kid and now she has this form of expression. And so I think that the way I see it is I'm sure there's lots of connections that we just don't understand, like the quote-unquote logistics of it. But I also think it just has to do with like something being placed in your hands at the right time. And they just happen to be placing dragons into you or giving a dragon to you at the right age that it latches on or it doesn't. Because Maegor never connected with his dragons. They tried to give him a ton of them.
Yeah.
He was just not interested.
I saw the Blackfyre thing coming the first time I read this, by the way.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. Yeah.
So obviously it's not like a...
Blackfyre, Valyrian.
It's not a sure of thing. Just because you're a Targaryen doesn't mean you're going to have some sort of connection. It's like something you're yearning for or looking for or wanting and being open to.
And in his case, taking.
Yeah. But he was older at that point, so it's like he can understand the mechanics. I don't know.
He was planning for it.
Yeah,
he
knew
like when
less
he was young.
Idealistic, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Which probably makes it easier for Beleriand to be like, okay, you can replace Aegon. It all checks out. And again, back to who do you like more? The start of this chapter, there's so much. I loved what you said, by the way. I think that that's it. I think it's less mysterious. Like, Tiana didn't actually curse them. She literally poisoned them.
That doesn't mean it's not magical, but...
Or does it mean it's not magical? Kind of. Because if she just poisoned them, is it really a curse? I guess you could call it that, but sort of giving it too much gravitas for no reason. So why give the dragons and the Targaryens more gravitas than they need?
It's fun and nice.
It is fun and nice. But what if someone else rides a dragon and asshole off? And we're we were wrong about history and everything.
Well, I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, well, psh.
Maybe.
I think that's what's going to happen. Like, okay.
Wait, since when? Who's he going to be?
Yeah, I know.
What's your theory?
I think that's going to be what's so interesting about that when it happens.
Just everything falls apart. All the gravitas of tales that we knew before are silly. And it's blood and steel and dirt and shit.
That's better, though, because, well, Maegor tries to kind of bring that into his reign at the beginning, at least.
Which part?
When he's like, let's fight. It's him and the Faith guys.
Mm-hmm. The Faith dudes.
Yeah, there's so many different groups of them. But when he first crowns himself and becomes king.
Oh, yeah, the Warrior Sons.
Yeah, he was like, okay, let's kill each other then. If either you're in charge or I'm in charge, whoever can win. And, you know, he almost died.
Mm-hmm.
But he wanted to bring that same kind of like grit and blood that his dad.
Yeah, his dad and his sisters brought in.
Brought in.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Or his aunts.
When I think about Maegor, the phrase that kept running through my mind was that he was like a necessary evil kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so bad that it was able to pave the way for the rest of them. But that foundation that the Targaryen dynasty was built on was fire and blood and rain. But we saw it from, as we were saying the whole time we were reading those chapters, we saw it from Aegon's perspective. And so he was hailed as this warrior. And I know that Aegon didn't, I know I'm summarizing a lot of the bad stuff that Maegor did. Like, I guess we could list it through, but he killed a lot of people unnecessarily and he did a lot of things unnecessarily. But he's also written as a bad guy. And so.
But at first, it I feel like there's some misdirection because you're reading this and we get Aenys described to us in a way that he's like the Red Viper of Targaryens almost, or the new Rhaegar, or the OG Rhaegar. But not quite. He's got aspects of his mom that we really liked, but she was being judged as a woman. So it seemed like it, I guess, made more sense that she would be like that. And also it mattered less that she was seemingly less strong than her two siblings because, for one, there was two siblings.
They were a package deal.
And for two, she's a girl. So it's like, yeah, of course she's like that. And there's Aegon, so it's maybe not that much of a risk. But there's no more mix of people. And there's also no diffusion anymore. When people were thinking of Aegon, they couldn't be like, well, Visenya's the evil one. And Rhaenyra's, is that her name or is it Rhaenys? I keep getting those mixed up.
Rhaenys is the mom. And then Rhaenyra is Aenys's kid.
Yeah, we know Rhaenyra's not Aenys's kid. Rhaenyra is Alison and.
Oh, sorry.
Jaehaerys's kid.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry. Grandkid. Before we started recording, you were like, can you name all of the lineage? And I was like, yeah.
Wait, so who would we decide? It's Rhaenys, right? Okay, so.
Rhaenyra. Yeah, Rhaenys is who you're talking about.
We're getting there. Rhaenys and Visenya, they, like I said, they had that stuff that the realm needed. They had the friendliness.
The balance.
The charisma. The wisdom to influence the artists and the middle people. And Visenya had the wherewithal to go, hey, now we just need to go make them pay really quick and just take care of it. And so it didn't get to the point where it ever pushed over to any, it didn't tip. There was no tipping point. But with this guy in charge, and he's not listening to Visenya, and OG balancing guy who is smart enough to listen to all the sources and come out with a better conclusion is gone. Now he's just kind of reminding me of Doran almost. He's sort of just resting on that. He's resting on a principle that Aegon talked about.
Right.
Which was let those things work themselves out. That's a different version of fighting. And he just rested on it all the way. And he did it at a bad time where It had been, I know 40 years you said wasn't that long of an amount of time, but I think it's enough of an amount of time for new people to get born, new people to get old, new people to replace them as young adults, new people to replace those young previous teenagers as teenagers. And they're all the same. They're all the same creature. They're all people, even though Targaryens want to look different and they want to be different. They interbreed within themselves so that they are different. Ultimately, they're still the same thing. They're still people that have the same sort of primal urges. And they're bored as hell. Mm-hmm. They're so bored. So they don't go right for the king. They start fighting with each other. And so just like what was happening before the Targaryens came and what was happening during when they were actually trying to get it all together and it was partially put together, these small breakdowns of the structure, of the discipline, of the authority that they hammered into Westeros just systematically started to break because people got bored and because they wanted a little taste for themselves. And they're not giving enough of a taste to everyone. These fresh battles create fresh alliances and they allow people.
Chaos is a ladder.
They allow new people who hadn't got a taste yet to come up and get a taste. If they hadn't got a taste yet, they're like, well, in this chaos, then I can help somebody out here and get a taste. Or maybe while people are fighting, I can sneak into a barn and get a taste mm-hmm. or into somebody's house and get a taste. Whether you like to kill people or rape them or hang out with them or take their shit. Or you just want to pretend like this was your house all along. Just get rid of them.
Yeah.
There's not that much oversight when the lords of the area themselves are involved in crazy shit. And then it goes another level up. And it reminds me of there's a part of the chapter that kind of weirded me out a little bit. But it makes total sense, but still weirds me out. This was when Aegon II and Rhaena were on their
little tour.
Yes, they were on their little tour. I'm just going to read it. All along the route, the small folk appeared by the hundreds and thousands to hail their new king and queen and cheer the young princes and princess. But whilst Aegon and Viserys relished in the cheers of the crowds and the feasts and frolics put on every castle to entertain the new monarch and his family, Princess Rhaena reverted to her former shyness. So this is when Aenys and Alyssa were on their procession. Mm-hmm. At Storm's End, Oris Baratheon's maester went so far as to write, "The princess did not seem to want to be there, nor did she approve of anything she saw or heard. She scarce seemed to eat, would not hunt or hawk, and when pressed to sing, for she is said to have a lovely voice, she refused rudely and returned to her chambers." She's 14 in this. And this maester, I mean, I guess we could expect the maester to be the one to do it, but ultimately, I guess what filled up in my head is just everyone's just kind of looking around, looking at them and seeing how their family's doing, what the vibe is of the people at the court. And that's like the top version with the lords and maybe folks that control the navy below them. And then actual lords, lesser lords, and then, you know, people that run their households, blah, 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 blah. So if there's discord with the royal people, there's an avenue we can go in and like, that's like, ah, I got you. And so now everyone's like, ah, I got you. And so they're constantly looking. They're not scared anymore. Mm-mm. They're not scared anymore. So this new king, literally on his victory march, they're like, they are looking and seeing the weaknesses. And the weaknesses to them is simply the indecision and the non-committal point of view of people in the family. They're already seeing it as holes. Like, they're not a united front like they were when it was just the three of them.
But you also add in the faith, the issue there as well, because that sows a lot of discontent.
Sure, but that issue was always there. The reason why it was less of a problem before is because they had such a crackless united front. It's like, and if you talk shit and you found a reason to say that they weren't doing a good job, they would just come in and burn you.
Right.
But this new guy doesn't want to do that. So right. They're sort of like without cost clocking all of the faults in this family. And
for good reason, though.
Yeah, they are. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess that's what you would do. That's what anyone would do in those situations.
It's a new thing. I mean, anybody does that now. People do that today.
That's what I'm saying.
But
it's hard not to notice it. But it's the stakes are less when you're just normal people.
Sure. But, you know, King's Landing is gross, and their dragons are not quite as powerful.
That was part of my point. You nailed it then. Yeah, the King's Land, getting coronated in that city, it's like, I believe you less.
He sat, was it Aenys who sat? Yeah. He just sits
in the scaffolding of the Red King.
And it's just, there's just a bunch of mud everywhere.
A bunch of mud, and the foundation had been dug around it.
His
that's quite an image that George wrote. That's pretty badass.
It is. His dragon's, you know, less powerful, and Beleriand basically rips its wing off with no problem. They talk about their different fire spurts coming out.
The one getting engulfed by the black flame.
Quicksilver just doesn't, and we know that the dragons get smaller and weaker as time goes on, you know, within the Targaryen dynasty or whatever, but he just doesn't have, like I was saying, you know, he doesn't have the power of the dragons. His castle looks lame. He has a issue with his aunt. I don't blame Visenya and Aenys, obviously, for the discord between them. I mean, I think that, like, Visenya obviously has, Aenys has a million reasons to distrust anybody because he's needs to hold on to power. And so Visenya obviously is not going to have his best interests in mind because her kid seems cooler to her. And so she wants him to be in charge.
This rebellion, this split between the family was doomed from the start.
But what I don't understand, is I don't understand why maybe Aegon didn't see this before he passed.
I think he was probably overconfident in his authority extending past his death.
The idea of him living on long enough that this thing could continue to work.
Sure, sure.
Well, he was wrong.
Yeah, he was wrong. I mean, I guess he didn't know Visenya that well. But I mean, again, I think it's easy to see her as a sort of witchy character that's in Dragonstone. And she's the mom of someone that's this cruel and vindictive, but
she's reason why he's like that, though.
Well, I think it's part of the cartoonish archetype that George is putting in, like the elements of Aenys's mom that went to him made him nice, and the elements of Visenya that went to Maegor made him crazy. It's sort of what it seems like, but there's no context in this chapter about the way that he was raised, more so just like where they were. And so if being in a place like Dragonstone could drive you crazy, I guess, then maybe that's partially the reason. But
well, and I just remember they were all apart for most of this time because when Aegon and Aenys were going around.
So maybe that's part
learning
of the lesson.
Ropes, and then Maegor and Visenya were on Dragonstone doing their own thing.
They were isolated, whereas the others were getting socialized.
Bang.
Right. So you got to take your dogs outside, basically. And people are going to, you know, see them act stupid, and they're going to be like, that dog is dumb. But mm-hmm. at least it's better than you never take your dog around people at all, and mm-hmm. every time you go around people, it just rips the throat out of other animals. That's less fun.
Right.
But I keep going back. I really feel like she had every right to be pissed off, and she should have claimed command. Mm-hmm. Is what she should have done. She should have claimed command. I don't understand why that didn't happen, and I don't understand the momentum of dumbness from Aenys. I can only assume that being constantly in a swirling truth of your dad being the supreme emperor of everything can give you that kind of brain space to just sort of assume everything's going to be fine. But
the king remained oblivious to the discontent.
Yeah, and he was at one point
makes blunder after blunder.
It was a very personal little part in here where George talks about Aenys basically writing to, does he write to someone? Also, Aenys gave suck. That was not a good. I just saw that in my note. It says Aenys was spindly, and the next note says give suck. George, come on, man. Within the first two paragraphs of this chapter, I get it. It does sound old timey when you say wet nurse. That sounds old timey already. And then in the next sentence or two, you say give suck. Definitely
went
sounds
right over my head.
Definitely sounds old timey to me. King Aenys knew these rebels had to be put down, but seemed unable to decide where to begin. Grand Maester Gawain wrote that the king could not comprehend why this was happening. The small folk loved him, did they not? Jon O'Saren, this new Lodos, the Vulture King, had he wronged them? If they had any grievances, why not bring them to him? I would have heard them out. What?
That's such a funny perspective.
It's like he doesn't even get what's going on. No one's mad at you.
Exactly.
No one's mad at you.
Exactly. I'm such a nice guy.
They're just bored.
Yeah.
They're just bored, and they're hundreds of miles from you. I mean, like, they're going to do weird. throughout this chapter, when Aegon, honestly, the whole time, even Aegon was ruling and he was distracted with the stuff going on with Dorne, there's been so many pockets of small rebellions and just things that need to be policed. That if you it continue to happen, it diminishes your dominion. That it's this something like this is allowed to happen within your dominion, and so it basically just amplifies along Aenys's lifetime. And that's really the story of Aenys. While Maegor festers and he proves himself with strength, tourneys, and with certain battles and fights that give him this like a. Reputation, along with the reputation that I think was also fed just by him being so different than Aenys in the first mm-hmm. place. They're like, oh, he's so strong and mm-hmm. so different. And Aenys was so weak and spindly. It's probably like a more middle of the road version for both of them. But when Aegon died, Maegor did go into the fire and get the sword. I mean, mm-hmm. that he's just like seemingly cut from a different level of intellect as Aenys. I didn't get, honestly, much wit from Aenys at all.
But, well, he said he was clever but not bookish. That he, like...
How was that clever, then?
Well, I don't know about that particular scene. But, I think about when he's... Also, that makes me think about when he gave the other Valyrian steel sword to Maegor. So then he had two of the swords. He's like, I don't want to fight with you. I want to rule with you. I want to do this together.
That made me really like him.
And you would hope
that was cool.
That would have been enough for some, you know, unfortunately, Maegor is, I think, a little bit too power hungry. And he's like being fed all these lines from his mom for, like we've been saying, pretty good reason. But unfortunately, he couldn't channel those two things. I think that if Aenys had maybe made some better calls instead of like marrying his two kids together and wondering why everyone's hurting my feelings instead of kind of trying
why
to
see. Why are
they
mad at me?
Yeah, you know, then maybe Maegor would have been more interested in creating a strong front. But it's just interesting. It also makes me think about like the importance of marrying your siblings together that the Targaryens had. Like if Maegor and Aenys were able to, you know, get married to each other, they would have had like a stronger union to like uphold the Targaryen front together because they were lawfully partners, where because they were brothers, they instead just clashed on the desire to be the one in charge, especially when there's no like real dynasty in place. And so
it wasn't that violent of a clash, though. Honestly, they seemed like they didn't mind each other. The exiles are sticking.
Well, they weren't pals. Yeah, I mean, I don't think they hated each other. They weren't close. It talks about them not being close. But I'm just saying, if they had been, that is an interesting thing that I just thought of in this moment of,
yeah,
is marrying your kids together is actually kind of smart, because then it pulls them together in a united front like we're talking about, mm-hmm. because there is no,
it's us versus them.
Yeah,
because the more that you work with these people, like you talk to the Archmaester and he's like, I think that's a bad idea. I think that it should actually be the Lord of Old Town's daughter. It's like, what? Random.
Who's she?
Random.
Where'd she come from?
I wonder why you think that. It's just Visenya is done with it. She's like, I don't like these people. I think their ideas suck. My kid is smarter and cooler than all of you by six. Why do I need to listen to you? So she's like, go fucking burn Old Town. And Aenys is like, that tower is older than where we're from or something. They're like, look at this. This is old. It's Old Town.
It's the biggest city,
we
too.
We can't burn Old Town. He's like, that's fucked up. He was like, we need it. It's cool to have. Like, we want to keep it. And she's like, I don't care about anyone or anything. We're going to literally stay here away from all of you guys until we get a moment to enact what we feel. Because any other version of that is not good enough. That's one reason why Maegor took exile so quickly. He was like, okay, well, this is what I wanted to do the whole time. You said I can't do it? Fine. Okay, 5 years? Got it. If it didn't have a deadline, it probably would have turned into a much bigger fight right then. But the fact that it seemed like, you know,
I go hang out with my new girl for 5 years,
right?
And no one's bugging me,
right?
Then I come back and
I can just take my dragon,
yeah.
And you know, Aenys doesn't say, you know, leave your dragon. He tries to get him to leave the sword,
right?
Says, all right, if you can take it from me,
which is such a funny response.
Everyone in the realm's like, well, how can you run the realm if you can't run your brother?
That's kind of fair, though.
I guess, but I mean, at the same time, like, it's his brother. Let him, you know, like, he's not going to execute his brother. Let him go into exile.
I don't know. Yeah. So
that's the thing. I'm what I was trying to talk about earlier is it seemed like we were supposed to like him. And then we're supposed to think that Magor is bad. But I thought that Magor ruled. I was so
so much sense.
I was so team Magor for so I was for so long. I was
let's
like
kill everyone.
I was like, Aenys is not, he is so useless. He's not doing anything. Right. He's built, Aenys is literally the Red Keep, or the reason why the Red Keep is so fat, thick, and strong, which is cool. I guess you want a weak king in charge whenever you're fortifying shit. That's pretty cool. But then when Magor gets back in charge, then it's like a different form of weakness. It's the extreme paranoia.
Right, because then he kills
everyone.
A castle
within a castle.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to kill everyone who worked on the castle so that they don't know my secrets anymore.
And then bury he tries their bones to, under there.
Right. And then he's like, oh man, now I want to build something else. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, I don't know if I want to participate.
They all left. See, that's the thing. That's the thing. And so I, like I said, at first was with him.
Because, he took it a little too far.
Well, yeah. But he was effective at least.
Well, that's what I'm saying is like at first you're kind of like, okay, he's got a strong arm and we need this kind of strength and we need this kind of fierceness if we're going to unite everybody's rebelling again.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, I'm totally with you.
Yeah.
But then he loses his audience and everyone starts to whisper to each other kind of like, is this, what's... Like, did he have to kill his wife like that? Or did he have to, like, watch as his other wife tortured his one wife? But really, Tiana was the one who made the Alice, like, the whole kid thing.
Yeah.
And all of his babies being born as these really creepy monsters.
Yeah.
And the poison. And he killed when Tiana was like, well, Alice is sleeping with, here's a list of 20 men.
We already got them.
And then those 20 men also confessed to 12 more. And so he kills all of those guys, but then he kills all of Alice's whole family and everybody who even has the name. And so he's like, let's stamp it out.
He goes to Harrenhal to get the rest of them.
You know,
he uses state-ran money, use the government's money to go deal with his, sort of domestic issue.
Yeah.
That didn't need to be dealt with in that way. He didn't even just fly the dragon there. He took people. That's where it started to slip for him. Well, it started to slip for a while, but...
But that's what is... Sorry.
No, that's fine.
It was always a chip on his shoulder, the kid thing, because he watched his brother have a billion kids, and then his brother has another daughter, and he's like, what the heck? Why can't I have kids, you know? I can't build my line. I can't have... a show of strength of force. I've got nothing.
Yeah, he's like, I'm impotent, basically. Yeah. Well, not quite impotent, but
so then
the idea that
he is able to have a kid, and it comes out this way again and again and again. That's gonna drive you to madness when having a son is so important for your dynasty.
It didn't seem like a point of the chapter that he felt like he was less of a man. For the record,
I read that. I like maybe that's me
reading between
the lines.
I think it's
in
there. I think you're right. I didn't think about that because he seems to be so sure of himself.
But every time he snaps,
that would fuck with him.
Is because another kid is born. We see that, you know.
Yeah, that gets to him because he's getting older.
Well, even from the very beginning when
he was 13,
the wedding.
Yeah.
When the reason why he gets married in the first place really is because Aenys and Alyssa have a kid.
Yeah.
And so like, oh man, he marries Cerise, right? That's how you describe it. She's 13. He's a lusty husband. He consummated the marriage 12 times, apparently.
And bragged about the next morning. I made a son last night.
You know? And
it's
so,
a fun breakfast.
But he, you know, doesn't. And he continues again and again and again to watch his brother have kid after kid after kid after kid.
Yeah.
He can't do anything about it. And then all the stuff is going on. And then finally, his brother has another daughter. I don't know. It seemed to me when I was reading this chapter that all of his major breaks kind of tend to happen around either kids that were in ahead of him in line for the throne or his own children being born in this strange way. And that was probably one of the major underlying reasons why he was so desperately trying to and do something, because
why didn't he just act like he didn't care?
Because that's such an important thing.
Yeah, or just lie.
He had like 17
lie
lives.
Like his sisters did, or sorry, like his aunts did. Yeah, I said it. Lie like his aunts did.
In what way?
Act like you lie and act like you're the dad. Like how they lied that Aegon was the dad of their kids.
Mm-hmm.
Dropping bombs right now.
Okay. Were they not?
No way. No way. No way.
Wait, for real?
No way. Yeah.
Why not?
I don't think so.
Why not?
Just I had a better
it's just
reason.
A vibe.
I used to have a reason. I had a reason when I was reading the chapter. Oh, gosh.
But that stuff's important. And so
I think 11 years into their conquest, Visenya having their first kids was a little suspect.
Really?
Yeah. And she was supposed to be barren otherwise. And her proximity to weird stuff and just the overall vibe of them all being so fiercely independent. And they're always separated. They clearly slept with other people. It seemed to me like Aenys was the son of someone that his mom met doing the stuff that she liked, mm-hmm. and that Maegor was the son of someone that Visenya met when she was doing the stuff that she liked.
Maybe.
Yeah. That's what it seemed like to me. It seems to me like the Targaryen line was, if we go back to this point, was always split, not just half-half. I mean, I guess always half-half, but I think that it's more likely that the Targaryen line that we all know about to this day from this point was originally from the two women being the only Targaryen blood left, and that Aegon was probably not fertile is my idea. They had two sons.
And that's it.
Yeah, they had two sons, and they had a lot of time with each other, and they only ever had two sons with each other.
Or, on the other hand, God bless, they only ever had two sons. I guess like that, that's not. But I did not think about that at all, especially because we read, like we were saying, they had such a squad. And obviously in this time, sharing beds was a whole thing all the time.
So unlike King Aegon was that he that few even dared suggest that his grace was not the boy's true sire. The Aenys was some bastard born of one of Queen Rhaenyra's many handsome favorites, the son of a singer and mummer of mime, and the prince was slow to grow as well. Not until he was given the young dragon Quicksilver, hatching born same year in Dragonstone, did Aenys Targaryen begin to thrive.
People are always going to say that, though, and always going to bring that into question when it comes to secession, right? Especially if he doesn't come out with a halo over his head, like the chosen king, you know?
Yeah, I'm just going back to the yellow toad stuff, and maybe something happened with Rhaenys and somewhere in Dorne. Maybe that's where her kid's from.
Sure.
That's where Aenys is from, and whenever they were able to squash that with some degree, years later, Visenya ended up having a kid too.
Finally, like down the line.
And maybe she did it on her own.
Yeah.
Potentially.
That 11-year gap thing is interesting.
Well, it's 4 years. We've been at 11 from the conquest.
11
yeah.
from the conquest. Like, yeah. They've been...
It's like, how busy were y'all? I know that he slept with your sister more, but it's just that it's so... This lineage stuff is so particular. And so, that's what this whole book is about. So specifically a part of the story that I think that sort of the double meaning behind all of this is that while this is all super important to you that is in charge trying to hold your position, it also doesn't matter at all. Sometimes there's no person left to marry, so you have to go marry a Hightower, even though Aenys did have kids that he could have been married to. So that's a little sus there in the first place, but I thought it was so important that you married within Targaryens. And they're like,
well, because they were trying to protect the relationship with the faith. I think that was that. And it proved.
For sure.
When Aenys was like, I'm going to marry my kids, that proved to be maybe one of the biggest blunders that he.
For sure.
And so ideally, in tradition, but it seems like Aegon decided, well, I guess he didn't have to, like, the issue never came to a head until we got to that point.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those questions where you come into a new land and you conquer everybody, and it's like really early on, what kind of things are you going to keep and what kind of things are you going to do away with for the sake of the quote unquote, for the sake of the realm. But then, you know, we were just talking earlier about how much it would benefit to have such a strong show for your fam when you keep it all together.
Right. But if other things are more important, like holding the realm together by appeasing other people, suddenly that thing that was, I guess, a part of your whole family creed becomes less important in this moment. So it's like it's really important until it's not. And that's kind of like the rule. You're really in charge until you're not. And then there's some fights and then people decide if they want to keep fighting or not. Well, I think in this case, it's like, well, the sons of the dragon. All right, the two sons of Aegon. I think it would be so funny if they just were not his sons. Sure. I mean, they're still Targaryens.
Of course, yeah.
Maybe people would think they're lesser because they're not the blood of Aegon the First. But at the same time, that's silly because it's clear that look at Aenys versus Visenya. It's clear that men are just not by default better than women in A Song of Ice and Fire.
Right, and Visenya and Rhaenys both were powerfully important exactly. when it came to.
And so I think it makes sense for their story that the their kids were on their own terms.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't even think about that at all.
I just think it would help make light of everything the way George wants to make light of everything.
It's also funny then looking at how Maegor handled, if that was the case, and you look at how Maegor handled that situation on his own.
His own succession.
His own as yeah. well when he thought that Alys had become pregnant by somebody else.
Yeah.
It would be kind of funny if it's like, well, that's what happened to your mom as well.
Right, but you're still Targaryen, so it's technically okay, man. But if you're going to be like your mom did, you have to hide it. And the thing is, he just felt like he didn't have to hide anything because no one could stand against his strength. And that's what his life has been like since the very beginning. We have three or four stories about him growing up and having an outsized violent reaction that made him the victor of all the situations. And there was no way to punish him for it because he was a royal kid.
And sometimes it was celebrated. Like
exactly.
when he was putting down some of those early rebellions, everybody was thrilled.
They loved it. And so that's partially why when I'm reading toward the beginning, I'm like, well, this Maegor guy, they like him better. I know that they should like Aenys because he's on a tour and he's rebuilding stuff and he wants things to be good and fair and for the vibes to be high. But that's all nice. That's nice. You got jokes to say, ha ha ha. But we're not doing so well 300 miles from y'all. And we have these vulture kings popping up.
Mm-hmm.
We got our new Lodos part two. Shout out Hannah's favorite character has returned in some
right.
way.
Some guy is out here chopping people up to pieces.
Watt the Hewer? Yeah.
Yeah.
Glad you're having fun. Cool. But we're not having fun is what they're trying to say. They're like, it's not that fun
and
for
us.
And
we remember what it was like when we could just handle it on our own.
They're like, we want to have fun.
Yeah.
You know, like we want. So it's like management versus different levels is basically what it is. And so the upper level is having a lot of fun. And so his mid levels are like, we're not having fun because no one believes that there's authority now that they think that you're not going to kill them.
So Maegor takes it all the way to the edge.
So now I like Maegor. Hold on, not yet though. I like Maegor because the way that Visenya tells him, she flies in like an hour. She's able to get him. He goes to the top of the Eyrie. He takes down Jonos. And it's one of the greatest moments of the story. Like, holy shit. The Eyrie was impregnable to any conventional assault, or so King Jonos and his diehard followers. Let's start it again. The Eyrie was impregnable to any conventional assault. So King Jonos and his diehard followers spat down defiance at the loyalists and settled in for a siege until Prince Maegor appeared in the sky astride Beleriand. So he's standing up. The conqueror's younger son had claimed a dragon at last, none other than the Black Dread. None other than the Black Dread, the greatest of them all. And so he executed them all. Even the highest born amongst them were denied the honor of dying by sword. Traitors deserved only a rope, Maegor decreed. So the captured knights were hanged naked from the walls of the Eyrie, kicking as they strangled slowly. So thanks for doing that. And thanks for showing us like the first version of your outsized punishment that fits the crime.
Right, but it was
just
fine
hanging
here.
Them this time.
It was fine here because
we could turn our eyes to it a little bit.
Right.
Plus they're isolated at the top of the mountain. Things right. are a little lit. Not a lot of people there to watch what they're doing.
And
yeah.
you know, they rebelled and all this kind of stuff.
What's most important is that you stopped it. And now we can all get back to taxing the Lobies and chilling out because we all got nice houses too.
Right.
And we just want this to be relaxed. Can you hold it together, because it sounds like Aenys was just kind of having fun. And that means that other people are having fun, but not us. Like, now we're the ones that have to police everyone. We thought that you were going to do it. And so if you're going to do it, do it. If you're not going to do it, well, we need to figure something else out. Like, if you're not going to do it, I'm feeling pretty religious these days.
Right, right.
I'm feeling really, really.
I love these little speeches that everyone's giving. The moon, what is it? What's his name? Maester Moon, not Maester Moon.
Maester
what do they
moon.
Call him? Some guy declares himself the High Septon of whatever.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Anyway, he declares himself that because they don't like that the High Septon in Old Town gave Maegor his blessing and then is having all these kids and all these wives. And so then this new guy declares himself the High Septon of like the lows, like the normal, the common folk. And he's going around and preaching against everybody, against the king, and getting all the small folk and all the normie people are rallying their faith and deciding they're super religious now because this new guy.
Well, because we're this group.
Yeah, yeah. Like I butchered that, but.
I forgot about that part.
Septon Moon. Okay, here it is. So popular opinion begins to sway after the whole Red Keep situation and after
this Queen is after Maegor's Cerise, king and Aenys is
he's
dead.
King, yeah. Yeah. Cerise gets sick and dies and everyone's like, oh, Maegor may have done something that the popular opinion like really starts to sway for the first time and the small folk don't really like how mean he is and they're kind of getting tired of it. And so the Septon Moon, he's like a High Septon that was raised by the poor fellows. That's right. Against yep. the High Septon in Old Town, a ton
Frodo
of crowds
Sparrow.
Are being drawn. Yeah, yeah. Kind of high barefoot vibes of the High Sparrow, just sure. like kind of pittering around, just preaching against the
no
king
edits
and stirring.
In his vlogs, none. He's like, I got this.
Yeah, just stirring more and more.
They're like, he has no edits.
Yeah. Exactly. So, anyway.
He just did a photo dump. That's not a photo shoot.
Right. Did you see that Biden did a photo dump?
No.
It was so funny on Instagram.
Really?
It was like the caption was photo dump and then the dates of the dump. And I was like, okay.
Right on. Hello there, young kids. Uh-huh,
exactly. It made me laugh. I was like, okay. These are whatever. That's a whole different discussion.
Hey, anyway, man, it works.
What I do want to talk about and what I'm really looking forward to talking about in our next episode when Jaehaerys takes the throne is how all of Maegor's mess that he ends up creating at the end benefits Jaehaerys.
Oh, yeah. He's a savior now.
And his ability to then kind of pull everything together because Maegor had, like you're saying, you kind of like him in the beginning for all these reasons that we've been talking about.
Well, structure now. We have it. We didn't have it. Now we got it back. Thanks.
But he is called Maegor's a cruel for very obvious reasons and things really get out of hand and he just seems to just revel too much in the violence.
That's
of,
the thing. It's like when Visenya said, if I were you, I would go to Old Town and burn down the Starry Sept because that's what's going to that is how we're going to get what we want. Like, we are the Targaryens. They let us be who we wanted to be when Aegon was in charge. Now you're in charge and you're trying to marry your two kids together, even though you shouldn't have. Okay. Well, since you said you're going to do that, now you have to make it happen. And if you don't, then the people that all of the governors that we connect to each other are going to start not defending you. They're going to start allowing their poor fellows to go up against you. There's going to be secret alliances. Daria Martell is going to go, I remember. It's just...
We're far away.
It makes so much sense to Visenya. I wonder how much she cared about making it stop necessarily.
Right.
For them. And, you know, for what it's worth, do you remember what happened at Harrenhal?
The first time?
Yeah.
Yeah, they had that guy, the Gargan, the guest... was going around sleeping with everybody and he had an appetite for young girls, which, okay, would go bed everybody.
Gargan.
People didn't like him. And so this guy, Hair in the Red, drew him out to the gate and then slashed him up and fed him to the dogs.
Slashed up his stuff.
Yeah. Had him
strung him up.
Fed him to the dogs and then declared himself Lord. And most of the men who were defending Gargan Co-Harris, I think is the last name, they all kind of agreed to join Hair in the Red because he was like, oh, this guy's kind of powerful. Yeah.
Yeah.
And our guy's kind of a creep. So most people decided to just join him. And then Aenys took a long time to do anything. And so by the time he actually came in to
with men,
quell
instead
it,
of flying there, they were all gone.
Yeah, they were gone. Or a lot of people were dead.
And they started to get scared that they would assault King's Landing secretly.
And, exactly.
The same way.
And then from there, then the Vale, the Iron Islands, Dorne, all that other stuff kind of just like, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse.
At one point, the walls were scaled and folks snuck into his bedchamber.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if he had quashed that thing at Harrenhal early and come in with a heavy hand if maybe everything else would have worked itself out differently.
That's the thing. And it's funny that his original failure is what got, is how Maegor found his first wife, basically, or his first real wife that he liked.
Yeah.
Alice Haraway. That's very, that's just, it's kind of pretty. That is pretty. I mean, when, what a picture, you know, there's also another really clear picture. There's two really clear, there's a bunch, but there's so many in this chapter. It must be so much easier to write like this than to actually have to write a book, just to write a story. And you're like, these are the things that happened in it. And then this guy goes to this thing. And then this guy goes to that thing.
Well, like you said, he kind of gets tired at the end. You were saying like maybe he got kind of tired at the end.
Yeah. It's a 60-page chapter, 60 full pages. So, we went through the entire lifetime of Aegon's kids.
I took all 9 pages of notes. Usually I take like 2. It was, but so there's a lot. But there's a lot. I was almost like, should we
split this up?
Split this up because there's so many little vignettes that were just.
It'd be so hard not to just talk about everything because it's all the same thing. It's a lot for all the same thing, but. If you're on the fence about reading this yourself, if you want to just have a clear, definitive picture in your mind and sort of feel familiar to these folks that you've never felt that close to, don't audiobook it. Read it on like 3 cups of coffee straight. And don't take any bathroom breaks. And I think that you're going to feel a lot closer to these guys.
It's getting better and better and better.
Oh, for sure. You mean Fire and Blood?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, yeah. I've really loved this chapter.
Me too.
What I was going to say was when Aenys was in his... bedroom, and you're thinking about folks scaling the walls. Like, it's gotten that bad that they're crawling up the walls to get you. Jesus Christ, man. And the same for his 2 kids when they were trapped with the poor fellows. I forget the name of the town that they were outside of. Basically keeping them there in this mean little shack surrounded by the poor fellows.
Throwing, and then all their friends abandoned them.
Rocks and stuff at them.
Yeah.
What a visual to be stuck in. I think I wrote it down here. The young prince, just shy of manhood, remained at Crakehall, half a realm away, trapped inside a castle, surrounded by the poor fellows and pious peasants, most of whom considered him an abomination. And they're just trying to be nice. They're just trying to do the victory lap tour that their parents did. And they're literally just surrounded by people who think that they're disgusting, yelling that they're an abomination at them, stuck there. And Aenys is up in his tower, and people are crawling up the tower to come get him.
Why is everyone mad at us? What did we do?
Everyone's mad and y'all wanted to be their boss.
Right.
How about y'all just go back to... Well, you can't go that back. You can't go back home.
No.
And Dragonstone's going to drive you all nuts.
Right.
That's the thing. It's why would you be crazy enough to try to take the Iron Throne is the idea. But, I mean, if you're going to do it, you kind of have to do it like the original, the big 3 did at first. But even then, it's just how do you keep everybody happy?
You don't.
On all levels.
I mean, that's a Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be sad or mad.
But there was no excuse for Maegor to blow up like he did. Like, he absolutely lost his mind at every turn. Just the vicious cruelty and
just like a proto-Euron. Unnecessarily enjoying every opportunity that he had to kind of make a splash. This is really going to be messed up. And then when he married Tiana, is that how you say it? Tiana? On top of all the bones. So when he struck
down. That was another
down
visual moment, sorry.
The warrior's sons, when they were praying, after he defeated
after
them.
After he healed 27 days later.
Yeah, they were all praying and everything. And then he just gets rid of them. And then he marries
like 1,000 of them?
He marries his little assumed sorceress from Pentos on top of all their bones. Another thing that I really liked when they describe. So there was a quote-unquote brief period of chillness.
Yeah.
Not a year, but there was like a couple months where no drama was going on. Uh-huh. But it described how the smoke and blood still hung heavy over. And so it was just always 24/7. And I think that visual of smoke and blood and not being able to breathe and just like being choked by...
It's a shitty town already.
Yeah. By metaphysically or... Literally and
figuratively, yeah,
being choked by the smoke that is just kind of
the outsized violence, the cartoonish reaction to what happened.
But like I was saying, and like we've been saying this whole episode, someone had, they needed to be fire and blood in order for this to continue to work. And Aenys just didn't have it in him. And so now Maegor was a necessary, like, unfortunately, a necessary stepping stone in order for everybody to be turn towards Jaehaerys, who was able to set himself up to be the guy and the one.
It's kind of like having your kids marry each other almost. It's like if you need someone to be the bad guy so everyone supports the new guy and not like makes their own new guy, but like one that you pick, you kind of have to make the bad guy too. So the Targaryens kind of did make the bad guy and the good guy in that situation.
Think about Daenerys. What is going to be beneficial and what we see is beneficial for her is because there's a very common evil.
Yeah.
That is a very, it's either everybody stays alive and tries to band together, or we all die by this like common evil. And seeing how that could potentially and will potentially, hope we get to see some of it, how that will change her ability. I guess she doesn't live that long, but
we don't know.
But in Westeros later down, having that like common enemy is so useful when, and I guess you could say even in American politics, like this common enemy is always useful when you're trying to sway the tide of public opinion.
Sure. But just need those aliens.
Right.
But even then, it's less black and white because a lot of people are going to ignore the fact that they're coming. A lot of people are going to just pretend like you're making it up, even though they kind of believe you. A lot of people are just going to leave and not like stay there and join the whole fight. It's kind of like Old Town whenever a lot of people left and then some people stayed and got drunk in the streets for Maegor to finally come there because they wouldn't come on, just approve of his wife. Are you nuts? What a sticking point. Just approve of the guy's wife. I know that you don't confirm, but it's like, they're like, what ground do we stand on?
But it goes against so deeply their whole thing.
Yeah, but their whole thing is also just stuff that they made up too.
Of course, but you know, like you're talking, I was about to say millions,
I'm having
thousands
the wrong
of years of tradition.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that stuff doesn't matter, even if I point it out.
Right. I'm not saying that it's right.
But that's
like,
that's what Maegor was up against. Like that's one of the reasons why he was so, I think why he was so, he overcorrected so much is because he was really trying to make a point that none of it matters. The only thing that matters is the fact that I can do this.
But Aenys, nothing mattered to him.
So he was the other version of that. Yeah. It just seemed like his cartoon was a little less cartoony though. Because, you know, like how hard did he chill? Did he chill as hard as getting married on a mountain of bones? That's my question. I guess he didn't really have the chance to. I guess that is, no, that is chilling, like waiting so long to gather like 1,000 people when you have a dragon and you just replaced Aegon and everything is still as crazy as it is now.
Like
that
I was saying,
that is cartoonish.
He's synced into the, we've been a dynasty for 5 million years. Let me just phone this one in because everyone likes us.
I'm going to marry my kids and I'm going to piss off my aunt and my half brother. I'm going to make everyone feel alienated and out of the club. Meanwhile, just being, hello, sort of foppish.
This chapter seems daunting and big and long, but I feel like there are these very clear themes that are kind of coming out of it.
What are the clear themes?
That we needed unfortunately, this bad guy to clean house a little in order for the Targaryen dynasty to survive.
Or we just needed Visenya to take over.
Yeah.
But would she have taken it in a really, really bad direction is the question.
I don't think so.
There's just something a little off about her and the darkness aspect of things.
Her description of her right before she passed at the end of her death or at the end of her life.
Yeah.
When they talk about how her skin was melting off of her frame.
Yeah.
Basically.
Maybe that's just a sexy way to say that she was old.
I think that that's just oldness, but I was just kind of like,
with the Darklands.
I'm afraid of this, this person.
Yeah. I just, the witchy thing is, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You like spells? Poultices? Speaking of Melanie Piper. Is that Melisandre? Melody Piper from the story. And I think that it's Melisandre.
Okay, tell me.
That's it. That's it.
Is that one of the friends of Rhaena?
Yeah, it's the main friend who's sort of influential in a way that seems outsized for Melisandre later.
Yeah.
So I was like, that can't be Melisandre.
Yeah.
But at first, when it was just like, and it seemed like George kind of stuck his neck out a little bit to go, and by the way, we met this person who really liked, we really liked being a part of the family for some specific reason. No big deal. So I thought, well, why is it important that Melisandre is named Melanie? Why? Is it a way to humanize her, or is there, is this another hint that's going to come off of another hint that you dig deep into and find? And so if she was mentioned once, hiding that name deep within Fire and Blood
makes sense.
If you're not going to show us at all, then fine. But if you are going to put it somewhere, put it here in this 60-page chapter in Fire and Blood amidst all this death and destruction. Yeah, like I said, it seemed like the second mention of her and the subsequent third mention of her in this chapter, and the way that she's more instrumental in their Westernland stuff. Again, there's so many details.
I know, because
I don't know how I remember this.
This is helpful because I missed this one.
It seemed to me like it was just a little bit random for a mention to be made.
Sure.
Is all I'm saying.
Sure.
So, I don't know. If she's not this person specifically, maybe there's some kind of a figurative connection that is like a hint or something that is buried in here somewhere. So maybe we'll get more details as we continue in the read. Maybe I'll think, you know, more and as the time that we have to wait till the next book comes out. And I'm like, all right, what now? Dig back into that
this
stuff.
This is going to be my new thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to have to look at something because I've already looked at A Song of Ice and Fire so much. It's like, well, you know, maybe we can dig deep into this one that we thought maybe doesn't have new stuff. But, you know, as I read more and more, it seems like, you know, like I said in the last episode, that's not the case. Still, creepiness around the God's Eye. I just imagine the God's Eye literally being a God's Eye. And he's just sort of like George is writing the story and he's got this overall awareness of, maybe there's at the very bottom of everything, like Stephen King often does this. Like, for example, Children of the Corn is this built-out story. This couple, car breaks down outside this town. They're like 23, 25. I think they're supposed to feel like they're 40, but it was made in the late 80s. So they were actually only like 22, but they just acted like they were 40.
Right.
You damn kids.
Right, right.
And nowadays it'd be like, hey, what's your number?
Right.
And when they break outside of this town and they don't meet any adults. It's like all kids. Like, what the hell's going on here? And it turns out there's this cult that's sprung up around this one kid who has the ability to communicate with this strange force, right? And so because of this power that they've gotten and this information that they've gotten, this outside power giving them the ability to dominate their current lives, which is to get rid of the adults, to allow them to really see that they can be ruthless enough just to murder these adults because you can just poke someone with a knife and they'll bleed out. It's like a scary movie. When we were growing up, we're like, oh my God, Children of the Corn.
Totally.
Oh my God. I remember parents wouldn't let me watch it. They like go in the next room, or I would want to get out of the room. Like, oh my God, something scary is on the TV. I'm 4 years old.
I never watched it. Yeah.
You're like, what could this possibly be? Right. Well, in the multiverse of Stephen King, all of his books are connected. And so this really influential pop cultural smash hit that gives you so many visuals, like when I say it to you and when you think about it, it's like, what could it be? It actually was easy for him to write because he knew the whole time exactly what the monster was. Mm-hmm. He was like, this is the monster. This is how it works. And then so from there, he was able to zoom out and go, this is how people in the town would react to it. This is how kids would react. Kids would know way less what to do than adults would. So that's why this monster would want to interact with kids first off. Or maybe if the monster had met an adult first, it would be all adults. Or it wouldn't be just kids if the monster didn't know that kids existed or something. So this monster that's in the cornfield is simply like a wraith-like spirit. Mm-hmm. One that is unfortunately able to cross-dimensionally from wherever in the Stephen King multiverse he's from to the Earth realm. And I think that he's doing it on purpose. I can't remember the dude's motives, right? But his motives are just more fruit to the story.
Yeah.
But ultimately, there's something down at the bottom of it that you can just choose as your anchor to write circles around. And so I'm like seeing like that Plantos is like a body and like the God's Eye is his eye and Magor is fucking killing thousands and 20,000 people right there for some reason. Why? Why is this so important? What's going on in this story? Like, what anchor is George riding circles around? Is it where the tree roots pass through? Is it the bottom of Valyria? I don't know. But it seems like there's some sort of, hopefully, there's some sort of function that he's able to use as his guiding force within all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's questions in this chapter. Weird stuff with Dragonstone. Again, more mentions of the God's Eye. Tiana the Tower, just in general, everything she's able to do, juxtaposing that with just simple violence and ferocity and maybe a little bit of mysticism. We don't know. Where did Maegor go when he was gone for so long? What does he know? Euron, horns, Old Town, da-da-da-da-da. So I think we're going to get a lot of answers in this read-through, is mm-hmm. what I'm saying.
It also makes sense because, and this is just from a very, I guess, meta standpoint of that, why would you take the time to write and publish and put this out there?
Money, money, money.
I know, but I want to think a little idealistically about it too for a second. When you're talking about everything swirling around the center point,
yeah,
there's got to be pieces in here that are going to be fruitful, even if it's little moments that make me think like the Sam Tarly, they call him in this chapter, the guy.
Savage Sam. Yeah.
Obviously, that's not connected.
With Heartsbane.
To our boy, but you know, little things like that kind of get your wheels turning and thinking about the characters that we truly, I mean, we care about these guys too, but when we think about our bread and butter, it's fun to finally understand some of the backstory and the motivation behind all these people that they, history repeats itself, that they've been learning from.
Yeah, it makes it more rich, but it also opens up the opportunity, like you said, for him to put the stuff in there to, one, make it useful for us to read, and two, to amplify the stuff that he's putting out right after this. I mean, what a great function and a opportunity for an artist to be able to do that. That being said, long chapter, long journey, a lot of reading for a pretty short point, really. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was kind of saying about us earlier, like talking in circles almost, because we feel like are driving the point home, because that really is the overarching. We're also very much at the beginning of Fire and Blood. We were looking before we started talking and recording about how close we are to the House of the Dragon people. And so we're about Jaehaerys is the grandparents of those peeps. So we're inching closer and closer to the conflict that's going to surround the main plot of House of the Dragon, which I'm really excited to get into too, and begrudgingly began this whole reread and this whole thing because, you know, I think the first couple chapters are not that easy, especially the first chapter is not that easy to get through. But like you were saying, if you haven't started actually picking up and reading alongside us and you're just kind of listening for whatever random BS that we're saying, I think that it is a worthy exercise that I am fully on the hype train about.
Yeah, me too. Especially if he keeps promising me. This is so far four chapters in a row that I've been promised that there's some stuff going on. A lot of little jokes, though. Little side stories. Dick Bean. And, you know, a lot of just fights over and over again. Then eventually, Maegor was sluggish and confused. He was literally so caught up in just murdering people that I think that he drove himself crazy. Maybe you can't stay normal if you just murder people. It's kind of like working out. It's like you're going to have bigger muscles, bud. Maybe if you're savage like this to folks, that it's just the humanity, the
like
ability.
Voldemort. They're like, you can't split your soul because if you split it too many times, then you become.
I don't know how true that is, though. You know, like, can you see yourself like, say you killed like 50 people, do you think you would be different?
Yeah, because you start to become numb to the consequences of your actions.
What if you're already, my dog is numb to murder. He's numb, but he's super nice.
Because he's an animal.
Right, but why can't we just unlock that part of ourselves?
Well, Maegor tried.
He did, yeah. And it, they just stopped supporting him. Because they had to. It's like the power of the gods is the only way he was shaken. They had to sacrifice thousands and thousands of their lives to make a rebellion happen out of nothing, basically. All about him not listening to what the crown said. That's something that Aegon really knew what to do. He knew that there was, I mean, it was the beginning of their stay there. So it actually makes sense that he would pay such like serious homage to the people that were previously in charge. That makes total sense. And to have the gates be open and to just be able to sort of like backpack on the power that they had before, it makes sense that he would be like respectful. But it also would make sense that Aenys all these years later would be like, I'm just going to marry my kids again because these are my kids and this is my legacy. And I'm sorry.
This is someone's son.
I'm someone's son, all right? I'm Aegon's son. This chapter is called Sons of the Dragon. I'm someone's son. What was I saying?
You were talking about how Aenys is someone's son.
He's someone's
son. What he got right by paying homage to
his. I think that Maegor had most of the infighting covered, though. It was just this one that came from like a command, basically, but also Septon Moon kind of energy. I think it goes back to, I think it's actually the same thing that the mids got mad at. It's like, well, now that the mids got resatisfied because of the strength, they're like, well, guess what? They're like, even if you kill me in the field, my life is basically just me dying because no one thinks I'm cool. I don't think anything is cool and no one wants to kiss me. And I don't have anything, you know? And my feet hurt. And I'm dirty. So, like, let me climb your house.
Right.
Like, let me crawl in the window. Just poke you, like, as hard as I can with this thing that's going to make you bleed, dude.
So I can feel something.
So I can feel something. Uh-huh. God. Okay, so I don't know how to fix it, y'all. But hopefully we figure it out by the end of this book.
Right. Well, we don't have to be in charge. We're about to spend a lot of time with Jaehaerys,
yeah,
too. Which I think might be interesting because then we can get into
how good he actually is, well, or how good he seems.
What we're missing,
he's post-Maegor.
What we're missing and what we like is kind of the weeds of why you make the decisions that you make. And we've been able to, you know, glean these big overarching ideas. But I think it'll be interesting to see literally how you're handling specific things and how those little things play out instead of it just being a sentence of like, he couldn't hack it and so he died, you know? So that'll be a good exercise because we've really sped. I mean, the history just speeds through this beginning. And so
yeah,
now we have an opportunity to like dig in as a lot of these traditions continue to get put into place and like the dynasty continues to be solidified.
And in our mind, minimized because we see how every brick that got there,
mm-hmm,
it's a lot less mysterious.
Right.
Don't read the history books, everyone. I feel a little bit less secure in how things are going in the world. Like, wait a second, it wasn't a tea party?
Uh-huh.
Boston, they didn't party?
Uh-huh.
What do you mean? Yeah. Okay. One brother died from indecision and stress. Just, oh my God. He just got so weak and he... And then the other one, the same thing, except maybe
supposedly he
slumped on his chair.
Yeah.
So do you think that there's foul play in either of these guys?
Yeah, I think that could both potentially be a question of like Maegor. First of all, the date that he died was too perfect for it to be
for sure
666. If we keep saying that on the podcast, we're going to get cursed. Anyway, I think that there's some potential idea that there was foul play with Maegor, especially because, like we were saying, his indecision or his not sure of ability to act is not something that we knew about previously. And so it seems a little strange that he, you know, what do I do? Dismisses everyone. But at the same time, I mean, who's to say?
What a cool lesson from Jerm.
I like the idea that there was a line about how the Iron Throne literally killed him.
Like, yeah,
maybe he just sat down the wrong way.
Yeah, leaned back.
Yeah.
Listen, when you're at that point of like exhaustion, of
you slump into your chair.
There's so many things are going wrong. Like, you're like, every food place is closing. Like, what the hell are we supposed
to
do?
I'm getting hungrier and hungrier.
You can either let it get worse,
uh-huh,
and you can like accidentally hit the corner of the chair and then sink back just a little bit because like your movement's sloppy and uncontrolled, and it might split you open from elbow to wrist, and you're like, fuck, like just because you didn't pay attention for a second. And you're more likely to not pay attention in moments where you're like that, where you're being overtaken by this emotion instead of keeping a completely calm and level head. And it seems like that's what happened to both of them in different ways. Just one was like a, which was how, that was Aenys' vibe this whole life. And the other was was Maegor's vibe his whole life. He was really cruel. At first he was interesting. He seemed like a fun dude to be around, honestly. But like mean, But geez, man.
He took it a little.
Lost the narrative in there. Somewhere.
Yeah, too many.
I think his mom's to blame. Who should have always been in control the whole time. So that's a, those things don't line up, but there you have it. Iron Throne killed Maegor.
Potentially. Maybe.
And
probably.
And now we've got like a new set of people, and they're just as good as the last.
Right.
Does it really matter when or where they were born?
Finally, we get some brightness back
whose in. Whose parents were who? Can we get this brother and sister couple back into their bedchamber, please? Can you all make some more kids or what? It's so funny. It really comes down to Maegor having three wives, and all these guys across across the nation are like, okay. Fuck that.
Mm-hmm.
That they're like, they're having so much fun at King's Land and they're having their kicks in any way they want.
Who was it that one, Tyana?
I can't remember. They're like,
did they all three sleep in the same bed on their wedding night? We can do that?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. It's like, wait a second. The guy taking guest right got murdered and now the guy taking three wives got murdered. Okay. Well, it seems like there's an angry mob outside your door at all times. Don't stick your head too high above the grass, everybody. Or you can. You know, you can be brave if you want, but don't be surprised if you get cut down to size. Bum, 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 bum. It's cool. I'm ready to die.
I was gonna say, from all of those moments and vignettes, then how do you even pick the one that stands out the most?
I'll say that I love that Oris came back and was able to get revenge in Dorne on his terms, viciously. And I also got a hand to Robar, who's going to be important moving forward, just to the Baratheons in general, for seeming like they're like sort of the upper crust of Westerosi intellect. Whereas like Lannisport, the Westerlands, the Lannisters, let's be specific. It seems like there are smart people, like pretty smart people in Westeros. It seems like the Baratheons sort of like are always right there. They kind of know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So Robar Baratheon for being smart enough to basically do like what modern, like what Illyrio is trying to do, you know, sort of being an instrument. And he can do it because he rules Storm's End. So there's, like I said, episodes ago, there's all of the justification for how this works. Like the math is there. Who's leaving what area? There's a quick little mention that when the Lord Reaper of the Iron Islands, who was Greyjoy at the time, overthrew the second Lodos, is reawakening, rebellion, sequel rebellion in the Iron Islands without really needing any help from anyone. He was like, "What do you need? I'll give you pretty much anything you want." He goes, right. "Can you get these pious septas? We got to call them nan septas. Like they're just like
we don't like them.
We don't like your robed heads and the like. There's just you guys think you're better. They think they're better. They're like we act this way, and they're like, and they come into our house and they say this is how we're supposed to act. No, we're not going to do that. We get one wish, send all of your church people and the science guys that you use to spy on everyone and to keep like a sense of connectedness and normalcy in this realm away. And that was the seed that was planted for the Iron Islands to continue to be as crazy as they are to this day. Whereas these other places sort of assimilated and fell in line because they had this influence that all came from the same place and this spidered out network. That moment cut them like the rest of the way.
They continue in their own tradition. It's like much like Dorne as well. It's like you can kind of continue in your own heritage.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. And they're
North
both like
too, kind of though.
Sure. But like, you know, there's Pycelle.
Yeah.
Even though
still
he's
wandering around
on their side. And,
right.
And there's every major town's got one of these guys too.
Right.
They're
right.
Always around and they're useful and they're free. But at the same time, like, you know what they do. Like they create the fiber that connects us all together. And they just didn't want it. They didn't want that at the time. That Lord Reaper didn't want that in the Iron Islands. It was such a smart move because they've been able to stay independent for so long and they've had fresh rebellions to this day, where we currently are in the story. Anyway, so I thought that was a cool mention. Those are my own. I think I have other stuff written down, but I think they're mostly just like violent reactions to stuff, you know, like
violent reactions to the violence.
Yes, like a more violent reactions to the violence. Fleeing Old Town. I thought this was a great. I'll be done after this. This is a night for song and sin and drink. Men told one another, "For come tomorrow, the virtuous and the vile burn together." This was Old Town when they thought Magor was coming, and he was. Others gathered in septs and temples and ancient woods to pray that they might be spared. Thousands, so they all fled from Old Town. And, yeah. And the thing is, our bad guy is the king, so he has full dominion and he can fly. And his
really fast.
Really fast. And his light can like light up the sky so he can see. So we're literally trying to find holes that we can hide in. Mm-hmm. We're going into the woods and we're going into ancient like crooks and crannies. I just thought that that was such a romantic, like medieval perspective that he normally doesn't give us because like they lead the Mudgate and it's like, all right, wherever – it's like just hawking fields outside of King's Landing. But Old Town, where it's tucked in, it feels lived in. Like it's like a really fancy suburb outside of that city. And it's like, oh my God. They're hiding in their fancy suburbs. They're scared to death.
And then who mysteriously dies before the sun comes
up? That was so cool. It's like, yeah, it's this one guy's opinion. I guess is your faith really worth all of that? That's a whole other conversation. The problem with the faith, you know, it's something that's not going to stop for these guys.
I mean, but Magor does do a pretty good job of eradicating any like possibility for them to band together as easily as they could before.
Yeah.
Which then we see the reversal of that
yes.
in our times and all the issues that that brings up.
It's just an interesting little balancing instrument from such a long time ago that is still coming back in a weaker form right now in the current story,
totally,
but still like weaker. Finding its own way to come back.
Yeah,
it's what a vicious scene though, that fight where Dick Bean stepped out and the other knight was like, any other knight's going to come and step up and do this too? And, you know, you're like... You get all the way to that point and you decide to duel people? I don't know.
But that's what you're saying is that we needed a form of strength. Like, they're looking for, and the people liked that too at the beginning.
They did. Yeah.
Like, they wanted the physical prowess that he provided. And so he decided, let's duel it out. Let's do it like my dad did.
Owens?
I think I'm going to go with this pretty early on in the chapter for my own, just because I feel like it kind of encompasses a lot of what is to come. But it's talking about King's Landing and kind of what it looks like. And it says, the fishing village where Aegon had first landed had grown into a sprawling, stinking city of 100,000 souls by that time. Only Old Town and Lannisport were larger. Yet in many ways, King's Landing was still little more than an army camp that had swollen to a grotesque size, dirty, reeking, unplanned, impermanent. And the Aegon Fort, which had spread halfway down Aegon's high hill by that time, was as ugly a castle as any in the Seven Kingdoms. A great confusion of wood and earth and brick that had long outgrown the old log palisades that were its only walls. And I just think that that is such a good summary and overview that we didn't really get that kind of summary at Aegon's peaceful reign and all the beautiful and peaceful times it had after his conquest. I feel like this does a really good job of kind of summing up what daily life was really like and all of the mess that Aenys and Magor inherited and kind of what needed to be done to really keep the kingdom going. So,
yeah, I guess that Aegon and his sisters probably should have just talked about stuff and agreed. And I think the foundations would have been less spindly, less slapped together.
Mm-hmm. But he didn't spend time there.
Yeah.
He split his time between there and he was traveling everywhere. Remember, he was on the road with the people.
Well, I mean, more so agreed on how they, how the city was built for sure. But I think that that's almost an analogy for the mess that they inherited.
Right.
Because if they hadn't had been so split, if they hadn't had a plan, Visenya wouldn't have been like that. And Aegon's kids wouldn't have been like that either.
Potentially, probably. So.
If they had a united front, it would have been the original issue, which no one can stand against. But now we put dragon against dragon. All of a sudden... everyone else wins. You guys lose. And you thought that you were actually defending what you wanted. Mm-hmm. You just let everyone else win.
Right. So own to that.
Okay.
Those are our owns. So next we will go on to your owns. And we'll stop first by Instagram. And our first own is from CH More or Less, who says, "Your grace is welcome to try and take her from me. The king wanted no smoke." Talking about the Valyrian steel swords. So
from Twitter @ Eliza Bennett _. Well, let's just read Eliza's own for chapter 3 too. Goes to Queen Rhaenys for involving herself into the affairs of the common folk and obviously establishing the rule of six so there would be no beatings or deaths excused by law. That's one little extra thing that they stuck in there that didn't have any like bad results unless you're the rapist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. So it's like, yeah, sometimes there's no like over outsized like negative reaction. Sometimes you just do a good thing. I think that those are harder to get unless you count the lashes on that guy's back, the negative that comes from it. Elizabeth goes on. Also, my own for chapter 4 goes to Lord Goran Greyjoy, who wisely asked King Aenys as reward for putting down one rebellion for the right to expel all the Septons who had come to the Iron Islands to convert the Ironborn to the Seven. They all should have learned from Goran.
Hmm. Our next own is kind of an honorary own that comes from at Mike McCann 555, who says, out drinking at the moment, very smashed, we'll send one sober.
Right on.
Sorry, Mike, you didn't make the deadline, but we appreciate the pics of your night out.
Thanks for letting us know.
Hope you had a good time.
From Travis Cole, Stray Savage Cole on Twitter. My own for the Sons of the Dragon. Where, oh, where shall I begin? Wow, a 55-page chapter.
You're telling me.
So much transpired, it feels like there should be a 5 owns, at least. Though, I'll do my best to dwindle it down to 3. The cherry on top came at the very end of the chapter, when indicating that Maegar the Cruel's reign lasted 6 years and 66 days? Crying, laughing emoji. Twisted to the side. I'm with you. Especially the sideways laugh. Though numerous owns could go to King Maegor the First and his mother, the Dowager Queen Visenya, who got my own last chapter. I'm going to give mine to a few more obscure characters in this chapter.
Heck yeah.
My first own goes to Savage Sam, a.k.a. Lord Samwell Tarly of Hornhill, who cut down dozens of Dornishmen with his great Valyrian steel blade Heartsbane and then tied up the naked Vulture King between two posts until he perished of thirst and exposure, thus ending the so-called Second Dornish War. I'm extremely upset this was never talked about in the show or in Aswath, to my knowledge. We didn't talk about it a lot in this episode either. Savage Sam is such a badass name, and I wish the Samwell Tarly we knew could have gotten that moniker, though Sam the Slayer is still pretty amazing also. I agree, but I'm glad they both got the same sort of aggressive name.
The alliteration.
Yeah, the alliteration, and I definitely think that Sam was like his spirit twin. Somewhere down the DNA structure, they shared something at one point. My second own goes to Oris Baratheon, a.k.a. Oris Onehand, for smashing the Dornish beneath the walls of Stoneham, dismembering Walter Will's hands and feet since Will's father took Oris's sword hand previously, then dying content and smiling at the rotting hands and feet that dangled in his tent like a string of onions. Sounds like a Baratheon if I've ever heard one. And Travis says, my last own has to go to Maegar the Cruel, when he had all the builders and the workmen of the Red Keep put to death after 3 days of feasting them with wagon loads of strong wine and sweetmeats and whores from the city's brothels to prevent them from ever revealing the Red Keep secrets. A nice throwback indeed. And then Travis goes on to communicate with Mike about the kind of alcohol.
The revelry that they shared. If you want to send in your own or any pics, nope. If you want to send in your own or anything else, you can find us in various places. You can find us on Twitter, on Instagram by searching for Game of Owns, or you can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com.
You can send us pics. If you're going to send us pics, send us pictures of your feet and don't charge us anything for it. Just give us all your
feet pics.
Prove it. Prove that you like the show. Show us your feet. Don't do that. The next episode of the podcast, Fire and Blood, Chapter 5, Prince into King.
Jaehaerys coming in hot. Let's see what you can do.
I'm looking forward to putting this guy on blast.
Me too.
No, he might be cool. I mean, in the wake of everything, he's probably going to seem like a total hero.
Exactly. That's what we So looking forward to that. So that episode will be next. Send in your own. Start reading. We don't know how long the chapter is. It might be another 66 pages.
Would you
at this
read
point.
Fire and Blood? Let us know in the comments below.
Would you put that on your reading playlist, order? What kind of books do you like to read? And who did you think was the best king out of this book? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. God bless.
Those aren't bad questions, though. If you guys liked Maegor for a little bit, so I feel a little bit less crazy, maybe, say that in the comments below, too. And Hannah, I will see you on the next podcast, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I hope that the next chapter is just as long.
Me too.